All right, let's go now to that 21st chapter. We had gotten down in the 21st chapter here to the 17th verse, and we'd read something about the measurement of the wall of the New Jerusalem. And very quickly, we'll read that again, because if I remember correctly, the tape was shutting off just about the time I was in the middle of the verse. So maybe I better re-elaborate so I can put what I said last week on the tape a bit. He measured the wall thereof 144 cubits, according to the measure of a man, that is, of the angel. Somebody said, now what is 44 cubits? Well, in our modern system of measurement, it's 216 feet. And some have argued about whether it's 216 feet high or whether it's 216 feet thick. Well, I would assume that the wall is probably the same size of the city. And I do not believe that a 216-foot wall would be sufficient for a city that's 1,500 miles up. So I'd be more inclined to believe that the 216 feet may very well be the thickness of the wall rather than the height. I would not be dogmatic on that point, but it would make more sense to me if I understood it that way. That would be quite a wall, 216 feet thick. It would perhaps surpass the walls of Babylon, if I remember my history correctly. Now this measuring is done by an angel, probably the angel that is many times mentioned in the book of Revelation. But he is giving us the measurement according to the measure of a man. The reason being that he wants us to understand the size of the city and the wall and all of this. So the angel did the measuring, but it was according to the measurement known to a man. It's called here, of course, 44 cubits, which is roughly 216 feet, according to our modern scale today. And then we pass on down to the 18th verse, and we see something about the walls as to the material out of which it's constructed. And the building of the wall of it was of jasper. And the city was pure gold, like unto clear glass. It looked like transparent glass or gold. I'm not sure that I can completely understand what that would look like. I would like to see it and expect to. But for me to visualize it as I would like to, I would have some difficulty. But it would be the most beautiful gold, most beautiful jasper and all of that anyone has ever seen. So the building of the wall of it was of jasper. Think about a wall, 1,500 miles square, 216 feet thick, made out of jasper. First of all, no one would know where we could go and find that vast amount of jasper. But our God that made the earth and the fullness thereof would have no problem in making enough jasper to build that city out of. Now, I believe this is a literal city, and I repeat that again. As much a literal city as the earthly Jerusalem in the time of Jesus. As much a literal city as the millennial city in the time of the Messianic Kingdom to come. As much a real city as Ashland, Kentucky, or Arlington, Ohio, or Chesapeake, Ohio, or Huntington, West Virginia. And after all, if it's not a real city, why does it have real stones in it? Why does it have real precious gems like jasper and all of these others we're going to read about? Now, is a goal a tangible or an intangible subject? Well, it's a substance that is very, very tangible. And that being the case, he says, and the city was pure gold. I can't imagine the city 1,500 miles square, 1,500 miles high, built out of pure gold. That would make Fort Knox, Kentucky look a great deal like a pile of trash. Men today will sell their souls for just a handful of gold, worth hundreds of dollars an ounce. But think about a whole city made out of pure gold, no dross in it, no alloy of any kind. Pure gold, what would it be worth? What would a city made out of pure gold be worth if you could weigh it 1,500 miles square and 1,500 miles high? One time, the Kennedys and the Rockefellers were making a joke among themselves, so I've been told. And one of them said that they had enough money to lay down their bills and would go all the way around the United States. The other one said, well, that's not anything. He said, we could build a gold wall around the United States with ours. But whether they could do that or not, I don't know. It'd be a great deal of wealth if they could. I know they're very wealthy. But I know one thing. God is going to build a whole city of gold, 1,500 miles square in every direction. He's going to build a wall all the way around that city out of solid jasper. And that wall is going to be 216 feet thick. I think that would far surpass anything that the Kennedys or the Rothschilds or the Rockefellers could do in our modern time. This word jasper occurs a number of times here in connection with this city. If you'll just watch as we read along. Remember back up there in verse 11 it said, having the glory of God in her light was like unto a stone most precious, even like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. Remarkable description there, the word jasper being used again. Now let's look, though, at the actual substance in these foundations. You've got a wall of jasper. But then this city has 12 gates, and it also has 12 foundations. It has the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. It has the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. The number 12 is often used here in the numerology of John in the book of Revelation. Now let's look at these substances, and I'm going to try to tell you the color of these stones. And you realize that stones sometimes may vary in color. So this many stones, or this vast of an assembly of stones, would be the most beautiful rainbow that the mind could imagine. First of all, you have the jasper, which may be white, red, yellow, brown, or black in color, owing to where it's found and where it's from. Can you imagine a wall with all of those beautiful colors in it alone? And the half has never yet been told. A city of gold, a wall of jasper. Then listen to the 12 foundations, beginning there at verse 19. And the foundations of the wall of the city were garnished with all manner of precious stones. I trust you realize that sometimes a small handful of these stones would be more money than we could ever spend if we had it. If we just had a handful of some of these today, of real precious gems. And think about a city that's got foundations out of these. Now, what are these precious stones? He names these off. And before I read this description, I want to point out something that came to mind as I was reading this today. There is a similarity between the precious gems in the breastplate of the high priest in Israel and those gems that are mentioned here in Revelation 21. Now, if you want to go and read that, you can go to Exodus chapter 28 and read verse 17 to 20. And you'll have those stones that are listed there in the breastplate of the high priest. And then in Ezekiel 28 and 13, there's a description of the devil in his original position. And he too had on the stones of fire. What all of those may have been, we cannot know. But outside of that, there's little other reference made in the Bible to these precious gems in connection with the things of God. So here is a city that has 12 foundations garnished with all manner of precious stones. Now let's start and elaborate upon these stones. The first foundation was jasper, like the wall, see. And of course, we've already told you the color of that. It may be something like three or four different colors. The second, sapphire. That's usually blue in color. The third, a chalcedony. That can be bright green in color. It can be gray with purple. It can be blue and yellow, owing to where it comes from, what country it's found in. And fourth, an emerald. And of course, I'm sure we know the color of that. And the sixth, sardius. That's red or white in color. Sometimes could be other than that, but that's the general color. The sixth, sardius. That's simply blood red or ruby red, as one man called it. The seventh, chrysolite. That's gold in color and transparent. The eighth, beryl. That's sea green, beautiful sea green. The ninth, a topaz. That's yellow green and transparent. The tenth, a chrysophorus. That's another shade of green, sometimes a shade of blue. The 11th, a jacinth. That's violet in color, sometimes known to be red also. The 12th, an amethyst, and it's always purple in color. Sometime you ought to sit down and put all of those colors together. Better still, if you had all of these precious gems to put down side by side, what kind of a rainbow would you have? And if you can in your mind, try to visualize a city 1,500 miles square that has foundations, 12 different foundations. All of these foundations garnished with all manner of precious stones. I tell you, God has indeed prepared some great things for His people. I'm sure that there won't be the modern con artists there that we have in this world, otherwise they'd try to figure out how to do something with all that. But you see, we read back in chapter 21, in the last verse, that those kind of people can't enter in through the gates into the city. So they won't be there. The thieves won't be there. And then we're not near through. Look at that 21st verse. And the 12 gates were 12 pearls. How large would a gate have to be in a city wall, even if it was 216 feet high? And I doubt that's the height. I believe that's the thickness. And if the wall goes all the way to the top of the city, and it's 1,500 miles up, how big a gate would you have to have, and how big a pearl would you have to have a gate that size? I suppose most builders would be staggered at trying to figure that one out. That is a big pearl. We have never seen anything to compare with that, never in this world. But remember that the same God that makes those little pearls in the oyster can also make a pearl of that gigantic proportion if He so desires. It's not beyond the power of omnipotence to do that. And the 12 gates were 12 pearl. Now listen to this. Every several gate was of one pearl. Of one pearl. Look at the way that reads. And the street of the city was pure gold, as it were transparent glass. Gold so pure, so wonderful, until it has the appearance of glass. I tell you, I can't even imagine a city like that. I've tried my finite mind to dream of what it would look like, to try to picture it and put it out in a mental vision. And it surpasses my ability to understand building and construction. But I would say this much, it would be the most beautiful city that any eye had ever seen, that any heart had ever desired. And God has prepared that for them that love Him. It's going to be a wonderful place for His bride to dwell in throughout all the eternal times to follow, eternal ages, we might ought to say. Can you imagine, though, 12 gates of pearl, all of these 12 precious stones, a wall of jasper, golden streets, a golden city. Well, it's just almost beyond our ability to visualize something like that. It's too stupendous for our minds to grasp. It'll be a most wonderful city, though, will it not? Well, I guess we'll have to wait until we really see it to know what it's going to be like. But it's going to be the most beautiful place that any man could imagine or even dream of. More than the Elysian fields of the Greeks, more than Abraham's bosom of the Jews, more than all of the wonderful places of happiness that any man ever dreamed of is this beautiful city. It surpasses all. I look forward to seeing it. And then we go on down, and he tells us a very important thing there in verse 22. And I saw no temple therein. And this is not the time of the millennium, because in the millennium you do have a temple. Ezekiel describes that temple in the 47th chapter of His prophecy tells its size, shape, and the like. But there is no temple in the New Jerusalem. You see, this is the eternal state. This is not the millennium. And I saw no temple therein, for the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are the temple of it. Further proof this is not the millennial state. In the millennial state, you only have Christ ruling on the throne of David. The Father is still in heaven. But after the 1,000 years, according to 1 Corinthians 15, is going to be the time of the great abdication when Christ will surrender his kingdom to the Father. And the Father will come down to earth, and the tabernacle of God the Father will be with men. That's back in the first part of chapter 21. So this is the eternal state, when you have both God and Christ on earth. And it says that there is no temple. Now, why do we build church buildings today? To have a place to worship God. To have a place where we may draw near to God and worship Him in the truth and in the Spirit. But we won't need any church building in the New Jerusalem. In a sense, it'll be one great sanctuary within itself. Furthermore, we won't need to offer any sacrifice of any sort, as they did in the Jewish temple in the Old Testament. We'll have free access to God. We can now approach God when we go to Him in prayer before the throne of grace. We can feel His sweet fellowship as we walk with Him from day to day. But in that time, it'll all just be one great day with the Lord. Be just one great time of free access to God. We'll have a nearness to the Lord like we've never had down here. Or we can draw near to God in prayer. But we're actually going to be physically near God in that eternal state. We won't need any mediating high priest. We won't need anyone to help us to worship God. Because we'll have free access to God Himself. Not only Christ, but also the Father. And I saw no temple therein, for the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are the temple of it. And then look at verse 23. It sounds like we won't have to pay any light bill there either, the best I can tell. And the way they're getting in price, I'd say that would be pretty good. And the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon to shine in it. For the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. It does not say here that there is no longer any sun or moon. Now look at that verse good. It said the city didn't need them. I don't believe that God's going to destroy the sun and the moon. Because there's one verse says that God's promises are as long as the moon endures. And I can't believe it'll ever cease to endure because of that. Because I know God's promises are never going to end. But you see, this city won't need the sun. It won't need the moon. Because the Shekinah glory of God will be the light of it. That brilliant light that was over the mercy seat, in the temple, in the tabernacle, in a very definite sense, in a more glorious sense, we'll be present there in that city. Because we will have in that city the one that said, I am the light of the world. John 8, verse 12. We'll have the one in James 1, 17 that's called the Father of Lights. L-I-G-H-T-S. God is the source of all light. Physical, mental, or spiritual. And here is the time that the very source of light itself will take up its abode in the New Jerusalem. It'll have the best lighting system in the world. The glory of God will be the light of it. And you know, the glory of God could scarcely be looked upon by a mortal man in the time of the Old and New Testament. But when we've been given glorified bodies, we can behold the Lord's glory. We can see Him as He is. But not until that time can we do it. And then let's look at verse 24. And this is a verse that's bothered many people. But it ought not to, because I believe it plainly says there's going to be nations in literal bodies in the eternal state. No, you didn't misunderstand me. I said, in the eternal state, there will be people in literal bodies of flesh and blood. And there are many scriptures that prove that, especially in this chapter and in a number of verses in the 22nd chapter. We'll read those later. And the nations of them which are saved shall walk in the light of it. Do these people live inside the city? I don't think so. Because they're said to walk in the light of it. You say, well, nobody live in the city? Yes. That's the home of the bride. Look back in chapter 21, verse 9 and 10. He told John, said, I'll show you the bride, the Lamb's wife. He showed him the city. But you see, there are some people that are saved that live outside the city. So not all the saved in the bride. There's clear proof of it. And they're called nations. And that means they're Gentiles and not Jews necessarily. I believe that Israel is going to be in that New Jerusalem. So outside of the New Jerusalem, you're going to have saved Gentile nations. They must be in literal bodies, otherwise they would not be called nations. So I was wondering, where are they going to come from? Well, you know, when Jesus comes back at the time of the post-tribulation coming, after the tribulation, comes back with his saints to raise the tribulation saints, there will be a resurrection, but there will be no translation. So all the righteous in literal bodies go into the kingdom, see. All right? They have children during the 1,000 years. On and on it goes. At the end of the millennium, there is a great white throne of judgment, the resurrection of the unsaved. But there is no death of the righteous during the millennium. So far as I can find, the unsaved may die. Because all is going to be in that resurrection is going to be the unsaved. And when I can read that in Revelation 20, verse 11 down to 15. So I don't believe any of the righteous are going to die. And the reason is, they're going to eat of the tree of life that will give them immortality. Ezekiel speaks of that tree of life over there in the 47th chapter. He says that the leaves of that tree is for the healing of the nations. And the fruit is also going to be used. So you'll only have a resurrection of dead saints after the millennium. So then you're still going to have a number of people in literal bodies that will go into the eternal state. Still in literal bodies that have come all the way from the tribulation time, maybe all the way down through that into the very millennial reign and then going beyond that to the eternal ages. But they're not lost. The lost have already been cast into hell. All of those up on earth are saved. There's no lost. And the nations of them which are saved shall walk in the light of it. So not all the saved are going to be in the city. The city is the home of the bride and the home of Israel. There will be some people outside the city, not in Israel, not in the church. And the nations of them which are saved shall walk in the light of it. Maybe I ought to put it like this. These nations live in the countryside. The people live in the city that are in the bride and in Israel. And the kings of the earth do bring their glory and honor into it. Now, they couldn't bring their glory and honor into it if they're not outside of it, could they? If you're going to go into the church, you're outside and you walk inside, don't you? So they're outside, they're Gentile nations, they're saved. And they don't have their glory outside, they have their glory when they bring it inside this wonderful city. So the source of the glory of God in the millennial reign as well as the eternal age to come following the millennium is going to be the New Jerusalem. In either case, the same is still true. Now, can you imagine what it would be like to be in a city that has eternal high noon? It never has darkness. It never has the fear of night, so common in many of our modern cities. And then to think about the privilege even of those nations that are outside that can walk in it and they can see the light from afar. You know, the other night I was traveling near Lexington, Kentucky in the early morning hours. And some 75 miles from that city, I could see the lights of that city shining up in the sky. As I saw the lights of that small earthly city, I tried to visualize what it would be like to live in the light of the new Jerusalem, where the glory of God will be the light of it. And I thought how much more wonderful that will be than what little I saw there as I traveled the highway. Now it speaks about the gates, and there are 12 of these gates, and there's 12 angels that stand at these gates as what we might call an honor guard. Verse 25, "And the gates of it shall not be shut at all by day. For there shall be no night there." So there's going to be one thing about the new heaven and the new earth that is not like the present heaven and earth. In the new Jerusalem, there won't be any day and there won't be any night. Somebody says, "Well, now what about beyond that, or way back out in the countryside? Will there be day and night?" Yes, just like there's always been. But you see, with the light of the glory of God, there will be no need for day and night in the city. Therefore, there'll be no time that they need to shut the gates. So how do you know there's going to be day and night in the world elsewhere? Does the 14th chapter of this book not say that the wicked will be tormented day and night forever and forever? Does that not speak of the eternality of day and night when you think about it? It just won't be in the new Jerusalem, because the glory of God will lighten it by day and by night. In other words, it'll look the same all the time, because the Shekinah glory of God is brighter than the sun. So it'll far surpass the sun. I'm not a scientist. If I were, I'd try to tell you what that light would do to the growth of plants. But you study about that sometime, and you'll see the wonders of the eternal ages to come. So the gates are not shut all during the day, and surely not at night, because there's no night there. It's eternal high noon, perpetual day. Sometimes we sing the little chorus here, "Every day with Jesus is sweeter than the day before." There it'll just be one sweet day with Him. Never end. Just go on and on. No end. A lot of times we come out to church, we have wonderful fellowship around the Word of God. We go home, we go back out to the rat race, as we call it. And before we know it, we're almost backslidden before the next service we have at church, because of the terrible worldly environment that we live in. But here's going to be a time when we're not going to have any of those problems with the wicked world. It's going to be eternal high noon. There's going to be nobody there but people that are saved. No lost people will be present in the New Jerusalem nor outside the city. Anybody that goes in and out of that city, according to this 21st chapter in verse 27, has to be one that has his name in the Lamb's Book of Life. If you have your name in the Lamb's Book of Life, then you can enter in through the gates into the city. But if not, you can't. And then look at verse 26, somewhat of a repeat of what we had in verse 24. "And they shall bring the glory and the honor of the nations into it." There are some people that say that the present Jerusalem is the geographical center of the earth. And I won't go into the details of that, pro or con. But I know that the new Jerusalem is going to be the center of everything on earth one day. It's going to be the center of things in heaven and on earth, according to Ephesians chapter 1, because all will be gathered together in Christ in that time of the dispensation of the fullness of time. So here again, we see people outside their nations, and they bring the glory and the honor of their nations into it. In other words, they're bringing all that to God in Christ, who are inside that city. And then in verse 27, "And there shall in no wise enter into it." Now here is who has access through the gates into the city. The bride lives there, Israel lives there, but these Gentile nations outside, in order to go in through the gates of that city, they have to qualify for verse 27. "And there shall in no wise enter into it anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie, but they which are written in the Lamb's Book of Life." Man may have his name on the church roll, but that won't get him in this city. He's got to have his name in the Lamb's Book of Life. He may have his name on the honor roll at school. He may have his name in the halls of fame in the world. But all of that is no avail. It does not qualify for entrance to this city. This city can only be entered by those whose names are found in the book of life. And so you have there some that will enter into the city. They're the nations that are Gentiles that live outside. Well, we'll say just a few words about the 22nd chapter. We'll not go very far, but we'll get through some of that before we end the lesson. Look there now as we go into the 22nd chapter. Please bear in mind that in this 21st and 22nd chapter of the book of Revelation, we have seven new things. New heaven, new earth, new people, a new city, a new temple, a new light, and a new river. The new temple, of course, is the whole city. It's a vast temple itself. And God is actually present there. And now, to make the city more beautiful, we read about a river. And somebody said, well, now that's figurative language of the Holy Spirit. I don't think so. I don't think you'd need a spiritual river in a literal city. I don't even think you'd need foundations and a wall to a spiritual city either, strictly speaking. But I think you would for a literal city. Jesus said, I go to prepare a place for you. John 14:1-3. Literal place, you see. And he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and of the Lamb. This greatly compares with the millennial state, because in the millennial state, according to Ezekiel 47, you have a river of life flowing out during that. The difference is that Ezekiel's river flows out of the sanctuary and runs down to the sea. But on the new heaven and the new earth, there is no more sea. And this is said to flow out of the throne of God Himself. There is no mention of any sea. Again, this is the eternal state. It is not the millennial state. Now that city is spoken of. If you want to go and read up on it some, you can. In Ezekiel chapter 47, verse 1 and verse 12. And the millennial river is spoken of in Zechariah chapter 14 and verse 8 also. But I believe there are two places in the Old Testament that river in the eternal state is spoken of. And I believe you'll find it in the book of Psalms. Look in Psalms 36, verse 7 to 9. How excellent is thy loving kindness, O God! Therefore the children of men put their trust under the shadow of thy wings. They shall be abundantly satisfied with the fatness of thy house, and thou shalt make them drink of the river of thy pleasures. For with thee is the fountain of life. In thy light shall we see light. I believe he's referring to that city there myself. Then turn to this same book of Psalms, 46, and look at verse 4. Just a little bitty verse, but I see something in that. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. The tabernacle of God is with man in John's city. Note what he says there. The holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. Speaks of a river there. Speaks of a river there, you see. So I definitely believe that this is not the millennial river. It's not any Jordan River that flows near the city today. But it is a literal river that will flow down by the streets of this new Jerusalem. It's called the river of the water of life because it has life-giving properties. The Bible almost ends up like it starts out. In the book of Genesis, you have a river flowing in the Garden of Eden. But it has four heads. This one doesn't have four heads. It just has one head, evidently the throne of God. And so you begin in the Bible with man and a woman in a garden where the river is. And as you come to the end, you have a river and God and men again. On the riverbank, as it were. Just as you start out in the Bible. Now, in the Garden of Eden, there was a river, but it's never called the river of the water of life. But here is a river of the water of life. It has life-giving properties in it. And that's why it's called the river of the water of life. Had Ponce de Leon waited until this river, he would have found the fountain of youth. And if the man happens to be saved, he may drink out of it yet. He didn't find it down there along the coast of our country. But there is a fountain of youth, and it's this river of the water of life. And note that he says that it's pure. It's not muddy like the Ohio. It's not contaminated or polluted like the Ohio. It's a pure river of the water of life. There's nothing mixed to it, you see. And then, quickly, we'll look at verse 2, because we ought to put all of this together. Perhaps we'll stop there then. In the midst of the street of it, and on either side of the river, was there the tree of life. And scholars argue about this, whether there's one big tree that extends out over all of this, whether there are many trees found in different places. It doesn't make any difference. It's still the tree of life, whether it's one or many. The meaning is still the same. Back in the Garden of Eden, you had a tree of life. There in the third chapter of the book of Genesis, it's mentioned. And they did eat of the tree of forbidden fruit, but they never ate of the tree of life. Because if they put forth their hand and eaten of it, they'd have lived forever, the Bible said. But they died, you see, they didn't ever eat of that tree. But here's paradise restored, because you can eat of the tree now. And there's no cherubims with flaming swords to drive you away. Free access to the tree of life. Drink of the water of life. Eat of the tree of life. Now, whether the immortal saints will need to drink of that water or eat of that tree, I don't know. I know that they'll have incorruptible bodies, and if they do it, it'll probably be just merely an enjoyment rather than a necessity, I would say. I believe that these nations will need to come in and drink of that water of life and eat of that tree of life, otherwise they would not go on living in a mortal sense. Think about it. Immortal youth. Men have always wanted it. Here it is. But it's for God's people. In the midst of the street of it and on either side of the river was there the tree of life, which bare 12 manner of fruits. I don't know what kind of fruit that is, but I'm sure it's good. There's 12 different kinds of it, maybe on one tree. And yielded her fruit every month. I've never known a tree to bear fruit every month. I've known some to bear in the spring and some in mid-season and some late. But I've never known one to bear a different fruit every month. That doesn't sound like any spiritual tree to me. That sounds like a literal tree bearing fruit every month. What sort of spiritual fruit would you have on a tree every month? Come and think of it. How would you spiritualize? What would you get out of it? Wouldn't make any sense, would it, to me? And yield her fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. There is healing properties in the leaf of this tree. Ezekiel tells us about the same about that millennial tree. But I don't know whether the glorified saints are going to need any of those leaves or not. It doesn't say here that the glorified saints are going to need them. It says that the nations are going to need them. It's for the healing of the nations. Why is it important to come in through the gates into the city? To drink of the water of life and to eat of the tree of life. Because if you don't have the right to come in through the gates into the city, then you couldn't drink the water of life and you couldn't eat of the tree of life. You'd have no part in that, see. Somebody, well, what if a fellow tried to push his way through? The angels would stop him at the gate. They're the armor guards. So, well, you're leading up to something else there that I want you to tell me about. That's another lesson. We better wait to save that. You can ask questions about it after it's over if you want to. Maybe we'll talk about it. I tell you, there's a lot in these chapters, and I feel that I've not done them justice. But anyway, I've given you something to think about. Go home and think about that city. Think about that water of life. Think about those walls of jasper. Think about those gates of pearl. Think about eternal high noon. Think about all of those 12 manners of fruit. It's enough to keep you awake all night long, marveling at the work of God, if nothing else would. Well, we'll stop there and take up in our next lesson. We'll maybe be able to finish the book, I don't know. If not, we'll finish it up after that sometime.